Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Well, welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to again talk about the Kingdom of God, and we're going to jump around a little bit. I came across an article in Sweden, written in Swedish. I don't read Swedish, but we have connections in Sweden, and they sent the article to somebody, and that somebody sent it to me, and with the help of Google Translator, I translated the article and found it of interest. In kingdom thinking, it shows that there are kingdom tracks all over. They are small tracks, they are not deep tracks, they are few tracks of kingdom in the world today, because the world has gone whoring after God's many in order to obtain benefits from benefactors who exercise authority. They are comfortable in that pursuit at this moment. In many places, many people are dying and suffering because of that pursuit. Wars and rumors of wars are around us all the time. Threats of losing everything of value is around us all the time. And we actually have very little of value. Most people in most countries are literally slaves, subjects. I heard somebody talking early this morning. I get to download some YouTubes early in the morning when we have the bandwidth to do so. And I heard somebody talking about citizens in England and made reference to the Queen likes to call them subjects. Well, the fact is they are subjects, and the citizens in America are subjects. And they are all subjects, not because of so much of what the government has done, but what they have done. Conversation with somebody just yesterday who came in and wanted to know, what was this argument that people say, well, we don't have to pay taxes because there is no law that requires that we have to pay income tax unless we are federal employees. And they wanted to know what the explanation of that was, and I explain that all the time, have for years. And what they were referring to is the 861 argument that was popularized by videos like Freedom to Fascism and etc. And I thought it was interesting, in an abbreviated view of that, they were showing it, and you heard them. They were showing pictures in the background of laws, you know, kind of drifting by the screen while somebody talked. And they were saying, well, there is no law. And right when they were saying that there is no law, I actually saw the page where the law does exist passing on the screen in the background. You know, I was just reading the pages on my computer screen as I played this. Somebody sent me the 861 argument in this little video. And so I was reviewing it, because I have to look at all the bear traps and quicksand and, you know, all the dangers that are in this labyrinth of schemes and dreams that people follow, trying to seek freedom. And Freedom to Fascism was one of those great pitfalls. Men went to jail. Good, honest, honorable, intelligent men went to jail because they actually believe there is no law that says that you have to pay income tax. And of course there is a law, and you made it. You made the law. You actually personally made the law, because contract makes the law. And people claiming, I had long conversations, we're going to do programs on that with individuals about, you know, how the contract makes the law, and how, you know, they want to dissolve the bands which have connected them with another. But they actually don't want to dissolve the bands, because they don't even know what the bands are that has connected them to others. And this is what we're trying to show you, the bands that have connected you, that have bound you, that have made you subject. And what is the law that says that you have to pay income tax if contract makes the law? Well, it's when you applied for a social security number. And the first thing I hear out of people, well, my folks got it for me when I was a kid. So your folks sold you into bondage. They probably deducted you from their income tax. And they, in order to do that, they now didn't used to have to do this. You used to just claim the number. Now you have, then you had to give the first name of the person that you were claiming. And then eventually you have to give the number of the person that you're claiming. Because you can only claim people who have social security numbers. And so you got a benefit by claiming your children. But you are selling them into bondage. And our article on Call No Man Father goes through the three steps of that bondage. And when you became of age, you used that number. And you said, well, I had to in order to get a job. Yeah, that's what they said, that the beast would give a number and that would cause everybody to get that number. Because of what? If you don't, you'll starve. There were people who got a job in Texas. I've read the case, had it here. I loaned it to somebody, never returned it. But it was a fellow in Texas who got a job, and he never had a Social Security number. He was a programmer, and he was doing a good job, and they liked him. But when the IRS found out about it, they wrote these, like, almost threatening letters. You may be subject to a fine. And so the company said, they want you to get it. And he says, I'm not going to get it because I think it's the mark of the beast. I never had a number and you hired me without it. And eventually the company got so frightened it fired the guy. Frightened by the IRS's letters. And the Equal Opportunity Commission took them to court for wrongful firing because they didn't have any right to fire him because he didn't have the number. And they won the case. They actually didn't win the case. What they do is they settle out of the case. That's what they do, is they settle out of the case so that you never see what's really going on. And when you take these things like 861 argument up, that, well, there is no law, and they can't figure out why they lose, because the courts are cognitive of the facts. And somewhere in that court case, they will identify you, and they will mention your Social Security number. And once you do that, then they know you're a member. And now that you're a member by contract, you applied for a benefit from men who call themselves benefactors, but who exercise authority one over the other. And this formed a contract. Now you say, well, then I'll just get rid of the number. I'll be out of the system. But there's debt involved. You owe money. Everybody in America owes at least $50,000. That's the low figure. Actually, there's another way to calculate that it runs up close to $700,000 per person. They don't like to mention that in the news very much. They don't like to mention the $54,000 you owe now. I think it's actually higher than that. I think that's several year old figure. So the fact is, you're in bondage. Everybody's in bondage. So what's the solution? Well, this fellow in Sweden, he writes an article, and he actually starts talking about the solution. He doesn't even know the problem. He doesn't know anything about all this income tax. But, you know, there in Sweden, they pay 70%. Somebody from England was just telling me that the sales tax in England is 20%. 20%. I live in Oregon here, and Oregon doesn't have sales tax yet. And so, you know, but down in California, it was 7. I think it's up to 9 now. But England is 20%. And it's amazing that sales tax actually is a tax on a tax. You say you make a commodity, it costs you $50 to make it. But you have to hire employees, and of course, you will be taxed. You'll have a matching Social Security tax, and you have to pay the employee enough to make it worth his while to work there, and he's going to have to pay a tax so that you have to pay him more, or he won't even come to work. He'll just stay on welfare. And so everything you pay him may be taxed, 70% in some countries, 20% in others. And then there's this Social Security tax, which is national insurance, I think, in England. It's Security Insurance National or something in Canada. You know, it comes out to SIN in Canada when you use the abbreviation. But in America, it's the SSN. But anyway, all those are taxes, and it increases the cost of the item up to maybe $100 per item now. So now when you pay 20% sales tax on that item, 50% of what you're taxing was already taxed. So you're taxing the person on the tax that they're paying, because the person who buys it is actually paying the tax. And then there's the greatest tax of all that it just goes almost completely unnoticed. And it's the tax called inflation, where your money's not worth as much at the end of the day. So, you know, whether you're in one of these countries that know they're paying 70% tax and they still have inflation, so in actuality, they're probably paying 80 to 90% tax, which is amazing. During the height of Tsarist Russia, the worst that the peasants were taxed was 10%. And you're now getting taxed 70 to 80 to 90% and you don't even know it. And you don't realize, you don't really study this kind of economy, that if you didn't have all these taxes, you guys would be rolling in dough and rolling in spare time. You could build a great nation. But all that's gone now. Now you're just clinging on and surviving. Fortunately, you have lots of DVDs and cable TV, so that you don't even have to go down to the Coliseum to get your free circuses. And free bread, you don't even have to stand in line anymore. You just get an EBT card. But the free bread and circuses that destroyed Rome and the benefits that destroyed Athens and the democracies of Greece is now destroying every country throughout the world. And those few countries that were not democracy are now rallying with great fanfare that they are now going to be democratic in all democracies. Just a matter of a few decades ago, the literature that you read would tell you that all democracies are absolutely doomed. They're going to fail. Because the people are selfish. And I wrote a number of web pages that are preparing you, as preparingyou.com, and I put them up today. And one of them was on Emma Goldman, who is quoted in this article written by Daniel West in Sweden. And the name of the article is Lefsum staten inte finns. And all those who speak Swedish, forgive me, because I don't speak Swedish, and I'm sure my American accent devastated those words. But to translate them into English, it's living as if the state does not exist. And I just noticed on the webpage that we have by that name at Preparing You, you can look up that phrase, living as if the state does not exist. Because I didn't put it in the Swedish, I put it in the English. There's an actual mistake on the page already, I've noticed that. I do my best proofreading when I'm not actually reading, when I just glance at the page and all of a sudden I see, oh, well, that should not be there. So while I am talking to you, I fixed it and now I'm saving it. But anyway, this is the title of his article and it begins with that phrase, but his very first quote was from Emma Goldman, and it says, if voting changed anything, they'd make it illegal. And she was very much against voting, but she was against a lot of things. She was kind of a bitter woman, in my opinion. I don't think I've ever seen a picture of her smiling. There's lots of pictures of her on the internet. She was very famous as an anarchist back in the 20s, up into even World War II. I think she died in 1940. She had a stroke. She's about 70 years old by that time. She was a remarkable speaker, could really draw the crowds. She was an atheist, and she actually kind of lived a little bit of a sad life. I mean, her first marriage failed before a year was out, and which is another mistake I think I have on this article later on Goldman, but I'll go back and fix that. I knew I had a mistake in there somewhere, and it just flashed on it in my head. I'm not even looking at the article on Emma Goldman. But the fact is this idea of voting, it is very clearly, it doesn't work. I've watched this for half a century. I was predicting who was going to win when I was like 7 years old. Sometimes the one who won was opposite of what my father wanted to win. And I just walked in the room and looked at these guys talking on our little tiny TV set. And I said, he's the one that's going to win. I was right. Every time there was an election where we could see him on the TV, when I was real little, we didn't have TV. But I don't know how I guessed it. I just knew that's the one that was going to win. I didn't say I liked that guy, but I just said that's the one that's going to win. Maybe because I grew up with TV and I knew what attracted people. I was always kind of a student of people. I used to watch old movies a lot, and my brother, my oldest brother, thought, he said, why do you watch these old movies? You know, they're not reality. And I said, no, but they're what people think reality is. You know, when I would watch movies, even still to this day when I watch them, and because of that, some of my family does the same thing. When I'm watching the movie, I actually see the cameraman in my mind's eye behind the camera. I see the lighting guys, and I see how they put the shadows in, and because that's part of telling the story. It's imagery. And a lot of people, they think the story is just words. And when you sit around the campfire and the old guys would tell stories, an art that's almost lost today, there was an art in that because he had to create the imagery with the words. But movies, they give you the imagery, and they're very powerful. And people are absolutely mesmerized. So we want to break those bonds too, those bonds of images, like you imagine that you're free, and you imagine that it's not your fault, that these bonds are binding you up, and that the problems in the world are somebody else's fault. No, they're your fault, and they're the fault of you all collectively. Because you are not doing what you're supposed to be doing. You're not doing what Christ said. And so you will not be free. And until you repent and do what Christ said to do, you won't be free. And this article will eventually point to that, or I will point to that at the end of this article, which we haven't even got into, and we're almost through with the first half hour of this show. But we're laying groundwork. And we're showing you, I have a lot of times I'll start an idea and I won't finish it. I'm starting multiple rabbit trails. And that rabbits always run around in a circle and come back to the same place. And it's kind of like one of those drawings where you see where they draw a circle and then they draw another one that's just like it, but it comes back to the same place. And another one that just like it and comes back, and it's geometric. It's another image. And all these things keep coming back to the same place. And I can take your mind there, but I don't want to take your mind there. I want your mind to go where it's supposed to go and see what you're supposed to see on your own. I want to iconoclastically break the patterns of your thinking that are keeping you bound, because those images in your mind and the thoughts in your mind and the idea, none are more hopelessly enslaved than those who believe they are free. You are not free. And you'll never be free. You will always, because you're not God. You didn't create yourself. You'll never be free, but you can choose which God you wish to worship and serve. Most of the gods many of the world that Paul talks about, they don't want you to be free. They want to control you. The Nimrods, the Cains, the Lamechs, the evil pharaohs of the world. Even the Sauls and Rehoboams, they want to control you. And God wants to set you free, but you can't be free unless you seek His righteousness. in all that you do and all that you think. You can't do that because you have all these images and ideas in your mind that is keeping you from actually listening to God's still small voice talking in your heart. So we want to get it right up front that you're not free. You're subject to the state. You're subject to the state because you made choices. And other people made choices for you, and you let them make choices for you. I believe that if you are really listening to God, if you're really coming into this world with a humble heart, and who does that, you would have known what was right all along. But if you start doing what's right, if you start acting according to the sense of righteousness, and you're in school today, you will be put down. You will be ridiculed. You will be ostracized. You will be drugged. They'll have you on Ritalin before before the day is out. And then they've got Luxol and Prozac, and I can't even keep track of all the different chemicals they're coming up with. I mean, it's Aldous Huxley's Brave New World already. But anyway, we'll start this article, but we won't get very far in it before we have to go to a break. But then we'll come back and take a look at it. But anyway, he starts off, live as if the state does not exist, and makes reference to Emma Goldman's quote, if voting changed anything, they'd make it illegal. So you want to know what does change things. But he goes on, there is something in that saying, isn't it? And so many generations have come and gone since the democratic experiment started, and the only thing democracy has led to is more centralization of power and more moral decay in society. So don't vote. Don't debate. Don't waste your energy on politics, because it only contributes to upholding the smoke and mirrors of the left-right political scale really is. Well, we'll break from the article for a second. That's the dialectic. We've written articles about that. I've done programs about that dialectic. You can look it up on our websites, and you'll probably... I probably don't have anything on that on the Preparing You site, but at His Holy Church, we have an article about that. And what they do is they try to create opposing ideas that everybody's arguing over here while they're pulling off what they're really doing over here. There. It's an old magician's trick. And it's very effective. And you don't want that. And Miss Goldman was very subject to that. And so are many other people. But anyway, when we return, we'll really get hot and heavy into this article and see where it's taking us.
When in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. Jefferson did not write, they are endowed by their constitutions with unalienable rights. Nor did Jefferson write, they are endowed by their elected lawmakers with unalienable rights. Jefferson did write that these truths are self-evident. Does that mean we have to go to school to learn these truths from a teacher? Does self-evident mean we have to read, study, and research these ideas in books written by other men? No, these truths are written on our conscience, on our hearts and minds, written on our souls by our Creator. These truths are maxims of His law. If unalienable rights are endowed, granted, or given by our Creator to each of us, does that mean that there is no free will choice, act, or deed that can bar us from access to these God-given unalienable rights? Is it a self-evident truth that we can freely choose to do anything and we will always maintain access to these natural law unalienable rights endowed by God? Isn't it a self-evident truth that the answers to these questions are no? Isn't it also a self-evident truth that in order to maintain access to the inalienable rights granted by God, that we must also maintain our God-given natural law responsibilities and duties in order to maintain our position or status in God's government or jurisdiction? Don't the governments of man require obedience to their laws in order to keep their civil rights? Why would it be any different for God? If we want to keep his inalienable rights, wouldn't we be expected to keep his laws, do his will by remaining obedient, loyal, and giving allegiance to him and his government? If an individual, family, community, or nation freely chooses by consent, participation, or appeal to create or join a different government that has its own structure and form, which creates its own civil laws, and grants its own civil rights to its members, persons, nationals, or citizens, doesn't the act of joining, giving allegiance, obedience, trust, and faith to this new government mean that they have rejected the Creator's government and rejected His laws? Doesn't it mean that the people have rejected God and His ways, and in essence, expatriating their natural status as a national in God's kingdom government, in order to be naturalized into a new government created by men via consent, contracts, constitutions, participation, and appeal? Isn't this what happened to the Israelites when we read 1 Samuel chapter 8? So how does an individual, a family, a community, a nation once again get access to their God-given inalienable rights once they have lost them by their own free will choices, acts, and deeds? Repent. Turn around. Go the other way, God's way. Start taking back the responsibilities that are imposed on the nationals of God's kingdom government. Responsibilities do not follow rights. Rights follow responsibilities. The first step is to truly love God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and to love your neighbor as much as you love yourself. If we want our God-given unalienable rights back, we must stop exercising dominion over our neighbors. Start keeping the commandments. Do not covet. Do not steal. Which includes the legalized covetousness and plunder that is mandatory in all man-made governments. Start by coming together in free will assemblies of individuals and families that are seeking to return to God's kingdom government. Families and individuals start by seeking, striving, and working to be the departments of health, education, welfare, economy, defense, agriculture, energy, and justice for other families in the free assembly, but also for other families of families near and far. The Creator is the God of the living, not the God of the dead. His kingdom was, is, and will be forever on earth as it is in heaven. Start by connecting and finding other kingdom-seeking families on the His Holy Church Living Network. Visit www.hisholychurch.org to start your journey back to your unalienable birthright.
Hi, I'm Brent. I'm a contact minister for the Living Network in Northeast Missouri. You're not the only one out there with the desire to learn the truth. There are people all over the world coming together in faith, hope, and charity. Join us at one of the upcoming gatherings to meet new people, fellowship, work, and play. Whether it's the Fall Burning Bush Festival in Oregon or the Spring Gathering in Northeast Missouri, you'll get all the details when you join the Living Network. Go to hisholychurch.org and click on the network link. Find out what you've been missing. You'll be glad you did.
Things seem to be going wrong in the world today. Every aspect of our life seems to be under attack sometimes. Many struggle to make sense out of it. What is really going on? Identifying the problem is critical to any solution. Many people claim to have answers. But what is the truth? What works? What has worked in the past? History does repeat itself, and you must learn from it. You have choices. We cannot change the course of history, but we may change our role in it. All roads lead to Rome. All roads lead to the kingdom of God. The question is, which way are you going? Join us to make sense out of it all for an iconoclastic look at the world yesterday, today, and tomorrow, and hear about the keys of the kingdom.
Well, welcome back to Keys of the Kingdom, and we're talking about this article from somebody in Sweden. It's interesting that I think his website is actually stationed out of Switzerland, and it seems like he's gone other places. I got a hold of him and contacted him and had to do a little bit of searching around because the contact wasn't there on that article. We have links there at Preparing You that will take you to the different places. To his own website, which is actually in English. So he supplied me what is better than the Google translation of his website, which is what I was using up till the time that I did get a hold of him, get his permission to republish this. But anyway, he starts off explaining that voting really isn't the solution, and quoting Emma Goldman, just referring to her that something in this saying is true. But then he says, but don't vote, don't debate, don't waste energy on politics, because it only contributes to upholding the smoke and mirrors that the left and right political scale really is. And he goes on to say, but if you can't make a difference through politics, what can you do to create a freer society? Well, you can let your actions speak for themselves. So he's talking about being a doer of something. He says the trick is to live as if the state does not exist. Unfortunately, I can't remember from whom I first heard this. He says, what does that mean? It means to reduce and eliminate all dependency of the welfare state apparatus by taking care of yourself and your beloved ones. Solve your own problems within the family and the local community. Make sure you can still put food on the table or in your root cellar, even if you lose your job. For example, by starting up your own garden and plant a couple of fruit trees. Follow your own moral codes instead of the often immoral codes of the state. Create your own alternative means of payment to replace the counterfeit fiat currency of the state. Now, I think it's interesting, he calls it counterfeit fiat currency down in the comments section. There's somebody who makes a reference that you shouldn't have said fiat currency, but you should say fiat currency, or at least that's what Google translated it as, and I think I lost something in the translation because that didn't make any sense, and so I left it out of the comment section, which I include, and that's only the Google translation. But fiat currency is not necessarily counterfeit. The state produces currency that may be fiat, may have no value, such as Federal Reserve notes. But that's not counterfeit. Those are real Federal Reserve notes that are fiat, that have no value. So you have to be careful how you use words. He goes on, and trade services and favors with your neighbor instead of buying from others and thereby fueling the tax system. Now, that's his opinion. You have to be careful of that, because your labor in these countries belongs to the state. What you really need to make reference to that as a gifting economy, where you just gift to somebody, you do favors for somebody, you help them out, and they either show appreciation or they don't. I've been doing that for years. I didn't look at it as a gifting economy. I just saw somebody had a need and offered them help. We actually have a major project going on, maybe right now. It depends on the choices that other people make. We're always big into giving people a choice. We see how the medical society has created a blood-sucking vampirial type of, that's a new word I just invented, vampirial, a blood-sucking system that depletes the life savings of people until they have nothing left whatsoever, and then they can get on Medicaid. Somebody who had worked all their life, saved up probably a couple $100,000, and had some insurance for their spouse, life insurance for themselves, you know, which can be cashed in, which are not really good commodity items, but it's what people were doing back there in those days. But he was thinking of other people. He was thinking of providing for his family. He didn't divorce his wife. He wasn't married three times. He stuck by his family. He took care of his kids, and he raised his kids in accordance to what the social norms would require, but you could always see that he was going the extra mile. Could have been on disability easily when he was 30 years old and just collected checks for the rest of his life, but instead he worked every day until he was in his 70s, dragging himself around as what was clearly a cripple, but still doing a full day's work and every chance he could. Even when he was retired from his own a ranching operation, I know that he went out and helped other ranchers driving tractors that he had to drag himself up onto, in pain doing it often, and would drive for them all day and charge them nothing. It was just in his nature to serve other people and other people's needs. And now he's disabled so that he can't walk, and the medical society is draining every bit of money that he's ever saved away. And so his son was looking, can we get on Medicaid? That's his thinking, you know, because we're trained to think in that way, or most people are. We aren't in our family, but in their family, that's the way they were trained to think. And they said, well, no, you can't get that until you have nothing left. You can have no assets, no money left, and then we'll help. And so he thinks, well, that's a fair one. Of course, they constantly say, well, you know, you can't get something for nothing. And so they have to become broke before they help be helped. And that's reasonable, considering the nature of the system. But the reality is that's not true. You can get something for nothing. You see, if he had just divorced his wife anytime he wanted and got married again and divorced her and didn't raise his children and didn't take care of their needs and didn't provide for his neighbor and just went on disability and collected a disability check all his life and didn't build a business and didn't help child after child after child learn to work on a ranch, because he has no grandchildren, but he has lots of people that have learned to work on his place and that he's helped over the years, that he has more friends than I can count. They had an 80th birthday or something for him years ago, and they had a big community hall down in the local town, and there was standing room only. I mean, it was packed. There were people that couldn't even get in the door. This guy had so many friends because he just led this life of service. But if he had been a bum all his life, government would be taking care of every single bill he has right now. It would be paying it all. for nothing, doing nothing, never contributed to society, always was a leech on society, he would be getting everything paid for by the government. Do you think that has an effect on the outcome of what kind of society you're going to have? When that is the basic foundational moral-driven precept of your society, be lazy, be a bum, do nothing, contribute nothing to society, we will pay all your bills. Be hardworking, industrious, you're on your own. You know, that's the message. Because that's the spirit that dwells in the society in which you created. Mr. West is thinking, no, we should be doing something else. I see also from his comments that he is a studier of history. He goes on to say here, after he says trade services and favors, he goes on to say, prioritize local community instead of state-sanctioned trade. Assume responsibility of your personal security in your home and in your community through common sense, neighborhood watches, local militias. Also see the book Production of Security by Gustav Molinari. Well, I'll have to look that fellow up. I don't even know who that is. Now, you got to remember, this is somebody in Sweden writing this. He's talking about local militias in Sweden. You know, Sweden's not a very big country. It's actually, we had somebody visiting here from Sweden not too long ago, and we were looking up, you know, what's the population of Sweden. It's tiny. I mean, the country's pretty big, but, you know, a lot of it gets kind of up there north, and the population thins out. Most everybody in Sweden lives in a city. Very concentrated. Very socialistic. You know, and here's somebody who just born and raised in that environment, and he's starting to think, no, we need to wean ourselves from that. Goes on, lead the education of your children, no matter if they're stuck in a public school during the day or if you live in a country where homeschooling is legal. It's illegal in Sweden. Plan for your old age. Avoid debt. Don't expect any state pension. Make sure that you have productive and natural systems in place that can provide you and your future generation with food and shelter. Make yourself independent of state approval. Banks and central banks that enslave society by first creating money out of thin air and then demanding interest on the monopoly money. Yes, just as Swedes have lived for thousands of years, the term Swedes only existed for a couple of hundred years and appeared when power was centralized in these lands. He goes on, because when the state can no longer sustain itself on the life force of society and trade, it will surely fall off as the leech it really is. Well, the reality is that most of the people within society are leeches. When you read Goldman and some of her writings, she is so much against, you know, capitalism even. She doesn't understand capitalism, but she's very much against capitalism. And there's nothing wrong with capitalism. Capitalism is just the private ownership of property. And the private ownership of property begins with the private ownership of yourself. When you make something, when you never really own the land. And the Indians are right. You never really own the land. But the Indians, a lot of the Indians, never really cultivated the land. Some of the Indians did. The Plains Indians didn't. The Plains Indians just wandered around. They had the horse. They could go anywhere they want, do anything they wanted. This gave them a tremendous power and control of their destiny until somebody began to control their environment by killing off the buffalo. But the reality is that if you go and cultivate a piece of land and you plant fruit trees on it and you plant a garden in it and you fertilize the soil with organic compost and you make something of it, Now that land, that tract of land where you've been working, contains your blood, your time, your life, your sweat, your toil. You've put it in the land, and it's proper that you have a limited or a unique access to that land. In other words, a limiting access to that land where others can't come and pick out of your fruit tree because your neighbor was sitting there lazy and he didn't want to plant fruit trees. He didn't want to haul tons of manure and compost and organic matter to make the soil fertile. He didn't want to plant the garden and weed the garden, but he wants to come and eat the vegetables out of the garden. Well, capitalism produced the garden, the private ownership, dress it and keep it. Socialism stripped the garden like coons in the night, ravaging your labor. And so capitalism is good. Goldman complained to capitalism as if the fact that some men had become rich was a bad thing. It's not bad to be rich. Now, how you got to be rich, that may be bad. But being rich is not bad. Corporatism itself is not really bad. Corporatism is just two or more people gathered together as if they're one person under a pre-existing authority for a particular purpose. The family is the first corporation. That's not bad, being that unit, acting as one person for a particular purpose. So corporations themselves are not bad. So what makes it bad? Selfishism. Another new word. That's what makes it bad. When you're selfish about it. When it's about you more than about anybody else. When it's about you as much as anybody else, now we're talking about the anarchism of Christ. Because he was saying you had to love your neighbor as yourself, which Moses had said before him, and which we see Abraham doing. Like, for instance, now, Abraham never said, love thy neighbor as thyself, but he did with his actions. He saw disputes rising up between the people that worked on the family, the domestic servants and family of Lot. He saw these disputes rising up in that small clan type group with those that were in his household. And he saw that was not good. And his solution was that, you know, let's separate so that we don't have this fighting amongst us. If you want to go to the east, you can go to the east, and I'll go to the west. If you want to go to the west, then I'll go to the east, so that we're separate. But you choose. And of course, Lot chose the better. But Abraham was willing to let him choose the better and take the less. He who is to be greatest among you is to be servant. And that was a servant-type choice. He was going to serve peace by giving the choice to somebody else. Giving choices to others is what freedom is all about. You cannot be free till you let others be free to choose. So one of the things that you're doing when you divest yourself of the need of the state is not really the state that you're divesting yourself of the need of. Because the state has nothing. The state only has what it's taken away from your neighbor. So what you're really doing is divesting yourself of covetousness. You're going to say, I'm going to free my fellow citizens from my wanton desires for benefits. I'm not going to force my neighbor to educate my children. I'm not going to force my neighbor to take care of me in my old age in a government that's bankrupt. This is one of the things that went on in my conversations with Moshe and conversations with Jim, which I'll be bringing up. I've been recording those conversations and I'll be sharing them with you, is the fact that they think that, well, we paid into Social Security, so we should have a right to take from it. Jim had a plan to save Social Security, which is ridiculous. It was his plan wouldn't technically work and could never be implemented. It would be a violation of the Constitution, which is interesting because he's saying we have to return to constitutional government, but then the first solution he comes up with to save Social Security is a violation of the Constitution. What section of the Constitution? The one that says that you can't make any law impairing the obligation of contract. And the reality is those bonds, you know, when they were pilfering the Social Security and creating these separate bonds that they make you think that because those are separate bonds and unique and all this stuff that these are just IOUs. Well, who owes what? You, they're your IOUs signed for you by the guys you elected, the lawmakers you elected. You owe it. And he says, well, now he wants to turn them into e-dollars and then, you know, at 2-to-1 and still fund Social Security with those e-dollars, which would double the money supply and create runaway inflation if you did that. But the fact is you guys owe those debts. Your surety for those debts, those IOUs is what keeping you in bondage. He wants to use them to get more benefits, guaranteed benefits that will be literally unfunded. I mean, you're trying to shove the wrong pieces together. They don't fit. But anyway, I need a chalkboard to show you how that works so you can get a grasp of it. But the point is, when you pay into Social Security, that's not money for you. That's not set aside for you. That's just fulfilling your obligation to your fellow man to take care of the needy of your society that can't work anymore. You know, the indigent poor of society. Moses always talks about a means test. Well, they wrote up a means test. Did you know that if you were a heroin addict, you could just, it would guarantee you'd get on Social Security payments? Guaranteed. Just because you were a heroin addict. You wouldn't have to work anymore. You see, all I had to do back when I was 20 is shoot up with heroin, get diagnosed as a heroin addict, and then I could have been on Social Security. I wouldn't have had to work for the last 50, 60 years. I could have just been permanently on Social Security. Or like I've known a number of people do, fake Gulf War Syndrome. No, not Gulf War Syndrome. What is it? Delayed Stress Syndrome. They faked it. They sat around plotting with another guy, and then they created a whole episode and got sent into a psych ward and everything because he threw the supposedly fit, but then he got on Social Security. He didn't have to work anymore. He still worked for extra cash now and then, got a new truck. The day he was guaranteed that he was going to get his Social Security payments early, he'd been mostly living off of taking care of his grandkids. One of his daughters were producing children by different men on a regular basis, and then he would take the custody of the kids, and he'd get a $700-$800 check per kid, and taking care of two or three of kids at a time, that was bringing in a lot of extra cash for him. He was already playing the system before he even did that. And that was his plan. And your system creates that kind of sloth and avarice. I know one of those children has already gone to prison because that's the kind of stepfather he was. But this is the society that you're creating. What are you going to do about it? Anyway, we're running out of time here, and I didn't get all the way through the article. But we'll talk about it in the next show. And we'll see if we can make heads or tails out of what the Swedes are thinking. We'll even take a look at some of their comments. And then we'll ask you what you're thinking. Until then, may peace be upon your house and may God be with you.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.com. www.thekingdomofgod.net.